What's up, everybody? This is Will Pruitt here with your all-access review of TNA Impact Wrestling. This is for the April 26, 2012 episode. Today is Friday, April 27, 2012, and, you know, I think I'm going to be a little calmer about the show this week than I was last week on our all-access podcast. For those of you who didn't listen, I did a bit of yelling. To be honest, I'm just very passionate about the James Storm character and its potential for TNA, and I think they're missing the boat on it entirely. So I'm going to get that out of the way real quick here. James Storm didn't appear on this show. You know, he did the going home speech last week, and it's since come out through some sources that, hey, James Storm, he's home healing up from injuries. Still a stupid idea. You know, James Storm wasn't too injured to go for, I don't know, what there was like an 8 or 10 minute brawl before the match at Lockdown and then a 20 minute cage match. So 30 minutes he was able to go for on Sunday. You don't have to have James Storm wrestle again until Sacrifice. And even then, you know what? You can have James Storm, you know, come out, cut a promo at Sacrifice and put over whoever he's going to face at Slammiversary. I mean, it's not hard to book him in that title reign for 2 months where he doesn't have an opponent. I know it's not preferable. You want him to make his mark and to have his fight. But, man, you know, you build someone into a number one contendership situation for Slammiversary. It's the 10th anniversary show. You don't have to have that title defended on Sacrifice. You could put him in, you know, if you really want him in action, you can put him in a tag match. Maybe like a James Storm and Austin Aries, a champions tag. You make it a big deal. Heck, make it an 8-man. Call it, you know, the biggest tag match in TNA history. James Storm, Austin Aries, Samoa Joe and Magnus against, what, Daniels and Kazarian? Let's throw Bobby Roode in there and Bully Ray? Like, do that match. And, yeah, you know, some of it seems like a Lethal Lockdown rehash a bit with some of the teams. But for the most part, it just seems like a really big match. Like, you know, you've got all of the, you've got the male singles champions, throw Devon in or something again, and throw Gunner on the other team. You know, you've got the singles champion, or you've got the male champions of the brand against main challengers and everything. It harkens back to No Way Out 1998 with, what was it? Steve Austin and some guys. Okay, maybe not the best example since I can't remember it, but I remember an 8-man tag headlining that show, and you know, the No Way Out of Texas show in 1998, and it being a pretty big deal, possibly because Austin was just that hot then. But anyways, not James Storm not on this show, taking time off. I still think it's a poor choice. You could have given him 2 months where he had to work a little bit of an 8-man tag and let him ride that out. And you know, short of them telling a really good story with Storm around Bound for Glory or around Slammiversary, I'm going to think this was a poor choice all the time. I still think it was that they didn't capitalize on him being in his hometown, but they can win me over with a good story with him. Like I said, my fear is that it's Sting at Slammiversary, or I have another option to add to that people I'm afraid are going to win the championship list, and that happened on this show. But let's talk about Open Fight Night. As a general concept, what TNA did with Open Fight Night was interesting. You know, you hear about it and you think, well, isn't that just kind of how wrestling shows are anyways? Guys come out, make a challenge, and someone comes out and accepts it and they fight. I mean, that's kind of one of those principles that we've always had with wrestling ever since the promo was invented. But, you know, there's no way to deny the challenge. Champions have to, everyone has to fight, all of that. And it created some interesting moments on this show. There was one that I didn't think was going too well, and then in the end actually caught me by surprise and made me go, I see what you did there, TNA Creative. Nice work. There were others that I thought were an absolute waste of our time. There were places on this show where the Open Fight Night concept, instead of enhancing the stories that are currently being told in TNA, it distracted from them. And it made those stories secondary to what was happening on Open Fight Night. Now, if this is your way to transition someone from one challenger to another, per se, then that's fantastic. But if your plan is to continue with the story you were telling, then why is Open Fight Night happening? Just kind of a, you know, a general, there were good and bad, there were good and bad portions to Open Fight Night, and I do feel like it was more bad than good, I would say, just barely. I give this show a minor thumbs down in my Pruitt's Pause that I just wrote. It's a little lopsided for me, but that's me. Let's talk about the show as we go through it. And always, guys, if you have anything to add, if you are a ProWrestling.net member, there's a .net member forum where you can interact with other .net members, interact with myself, Jason Powell, Chris Shore, Jake Barnett, Ryan Kester, any of the .net staff. The members are also super cool, except for Mojo. And it's just a good place to go and hang out if you're one of those message board types who likes talking about wrestling on those things. You're going to have some good discussions here. And, you know, we get a little into it sometimes. It gets passionate. We write, like, pages to each other. It's kind of obnoxious, actually. I don't read that crap. But, you know, some people do. It's fun. It's a good time online. And if you have anything, .net members, if you want to throw anything my way about my criticisms of the show, throw it in my forum section. Non-.net members, if you want access to do that, plus access to the entire ProWrestling.net membership section, which is just great. I was a ProWrestling.net member prior to subscribing, or prior to starting to write to the site. I paid for it. I was a fan of it. And let me tell you why real... Let me tell you why real quick. .net member audio shows. If you're into audio, and I'm guessing you are because you're listening to the All Access podcast right now, you're going to get, on a weekly basis, just hours of audio. We have a new audio update almost every day, and we do long ones here. We don't do your 10-minute audio update. We go the distance. Shows that are just members exclusive pretty much all the time. Pay-per-view audio reviews. Normally, it's Jason Powell or Jason Powell and Chris Shore sitting down to review a WWE or TNA pay-per-view. Night of the show, you're going to get that. Normally, most people don't listen until Monday morning because they go up pretty late on night of the show. But you get anywhere from an hour to about an hour and a half just on the pay-per-view talking about, you know, every match on the show, the finishes, where the stories are going, any backstage news that Jason has picked up throughout the evening, which happens quite a bit. So you get your pay-per-view audio shows. I'll just take you through the week. You get Raw on Mondays. You get Jason Powell's Raw audio review, normally a member exclusive, occasionally makes it to the All Access side. On Tuesdays, you get the Pro Wrestling, or the Pro Wrestling Torch live cast with Jason Powell and Wade Keller talking about the news of the week. And again, you know, they usually do a VIP after show available only to Torch VIP members or .net or .net members. And that is usually, this week I think it was only 15 minutes, but honestly it's gone 2 hours before. Normally it's in the 1 hour range. They talk a lot. Let's be real. But it's really great wrestling analysis, and especially once they get past the taking calls, it's a time where they sit down and they just break down the week. Wednesdays, you get a double dose. You get the .net countdown with myself and Jake Barnett talking about the top five and bottom three moments of the week. And we are always open to suggestions for that show and open to chatting about it. So that's another place where the .net member forum comes in handy. And you get Chris Shore's audio slant, which is Chris Shore with his always interesting, occasionally controversial views on the wrestling business. On a, you know, he breaks it into segments, normally two big subjects in a week. Then he talks a little bit about the endings. He talks a little bit about, what does he even talk about, guys? He talks a little bit about history. Chris is a great wrestling mind, and even if you disagree with him, he's a guy who is happy to get into an argument with you. I've had many with him, it's always fun. Chris and I do audio together on occasion, and Chris is always great. And he's always just really interesting and fun to listen to. Then on Thursdays, you get the flagship, ProWrestling.net's Biggin', and that is .net Weekly. Chris Shore and Jason Powell sit down. They go through the news of the week, often breaking first-run news, backstage tidbits, all that kind of stuff, in that audio show. And they're not going to go beyond that audio show. Short of a cut-and-paste site, listening to the audio and typing it out, which doesn't happen that often because I doubt they pay for the membership option. You know, those little news tidbits, they don't go onto the main page. They don't make it there. It's a lot of backstage rumors, backstage feelings, one source type of stuff where you're going to be on the inside. You're going to know some things. Then on Fridays, you've got Jason Powell's Q&A, where Jason will answer member questions. You put them in the forum, you email them to him. So if you want to know about something going on backstage, Jason will ask his sources for you. If you want to know about a certain wrestler's push or something in history, Jason will do his best to answer that question for you. Always fun. And of course, there's non-wrestling topics as well. Then on also on Fridays, you get my Impact audio reviews, which you're listening to right now and probably wishing I would actually get to reviewing Impact. And then on Saturdays, you get the SmackDown audio review with Jake Barnett and Chris Shore. All of that, ProWrestling.net audio. Plus, you've got interviews with, right now we have recent interviews with Gregory Helms, Sean Dabari, Gabe Sapolsky, Larry Dallas, former WWE creative team members, Chris Roach, and Christopher DeJoseph. There are a ton of audio updates. Court Bowers talked with Jason. Dutch Mantel has talked with Jason. Seth Mates. Reviews WrestleMania with us almost every year. It is awesome, guys. The ProWrestling.net member audio is great. Plus, you get ad-free access to the site and all that. And now, I know I've talked you into it. This persuasive argument has been effective, and you're sitting there going, well, how do I do it? I'll tell you how. Go over to ProWrestling.net on the right-hand side of the page. There is a membership link. Click that bad boy. For as low as $5.50 a month, if you are locked in, you know you want it, and you want to take the annual option. If you just want to try it out for a month, maybe listen to the interviews, listen to the audio shows, see if it's really worth it. $7.50 for a month. No harm in doing that. ProWrestling.net. Membership link on the right-hand side of the page. Get it done. Also interviews with Chris Jericho, Brock Lesnar, and some others on there. It's a, you know, there is a treasure trove of interview. There is a treasure trove of just great information. Always worth going back and checking out. So ProWrestling.net is the website. And with that, let's get more into the show. I told you my initial thoughts on the concept a moment ago, and let's just start going through it seg by seg. That's short for segment, by the way. Seg. See what I did there? I shortened it by taking the ment part off, because people say seg one or seg two. I'm just saying seg now. Boom. Get it done. Yes, I just explained an abbreviation to you. Yes, I am kind of a jackass. Let's get into the show. The show opened with a video package saying what Open Fight Night is all about. It was kind of a TNA hype package, and one thing I have to say about TNA that really bothers me, and it's a little production thing. Have you noticed that when they make their graphics for, like, Open Fight Night or Gut Check, the graphic shakes from side to side of the screen, and that's, like, their production department's favorite effect is, look at how shaky it is. This night is unstable. Oh, it's gonna shake. I noticed it especially when they went into the Gut Check segment, and they showed the big crane shot of the Impact Zone, where you can see almost every TV monitor in the Impact Zone, and you see them all shaking like crazy face, and you're just like, oh my gosh, this is too much to keep track of right now. Please stop it, TNA. Please, 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 please stop it. So that was kind of an irritating moment. They went into Open Fight Night with their shaky graphic, and Hulk Hogan was shown backstage talking to all of the champions. Aside from D-Von was not there. I don't think Eric Young and ODB were there either. So it's the tag champs, Samoa Joe and Magnus. It's Bobby Roode. It was Austin Aries and Gail Kim. I think that's all. I want to say it was. And he's talking to them, basically saying, you know, someone's going to have to step up tonight. Someone is going to have to defend their titles. And he put over each champion. At one point, calling, and this was an odd moment for me, calling Samoa Joe and Magnus the best tag team of all time. And I just sat there at home going, you know, they're good and best in the world today. I will give you, if you want to call them that, because they're your tag champs. You call them the best. You know, hey, by virtue of having those titles, this is the best tag team in the world today. That's all you've got to say. But they're sitting there, and Hogan says, the best tag team of all time, Samoa Joe and Magnus. And then later on in the show, or later on in the same segment, he said, you need to step up and show me what you've got, brothers. Dude, you just called us the best tag team of all time. What do you mean we need to step up? That was an odd moment. But basically, the point of this was, Hogan was choosing which champion will defend their title on Open Fight Night, and it will be Samoa Joe and Magnus. So I guess Open Fight Night, and, you know, I'm going to get into just kind of the rules of it. I guess on Open Fight Night, only one championship has to be defended, aside from the TV title, which is defended every week. Only one has to be defended. And that championship is selected by Hogan. Does this mean that they're going to cut back on the title matches on Impact? Because on any given episode of Impact, we'll have like three title matches. They'll be like, knockouts tag team, and tag team titles all on the line tonight. Just random Impact episode, not announced beforehand. You know, they go on the air and it's just like, we've got three title contests for you this evening. Does that mean that we're going to cut back on that? Because if it does, I'm chill with it. I like it. And I liked the selection of the tag champions here, and we'll get into why, but all night long, they made the tag team championships feel like something a team should want to have. And that, it seems so rudimentary. But that's where wrestling companies have failed tag teams. Look at a best example I can think of right now. Why would anyone want to be WWE tag team champions at the moment? What? You mean we can get squashed by Big Show and Kali too? Epico and Primo, FT Dubs! That's basically what it feels like. And I don't feel like... I don't believe that that's what a tag team champion should be. So, I liked the selection of Joe and Magnus. It made the tag team titles look desired throughout the evening. As far as the actual segment, Bobby Roode was doing like his best teenager in the principal's office or sitting with the teacher going, I don't care. You're a jerk. You're not my dad anymore, to Hogan. And that was cute, right? It was cute. You guys want to go with cute? I want to go with cute. Then, you know, kind of turned to the cameras and welcomed the fans to Open Fight Night. And we saw an Impact opening video that was specially for Open Fight Night. What I liked about this video package was it was specially for Open Fight Night. It made this feel like a very special episode of Impact, and not a very special episode in the, like, kid gets touched way. A very special, or, you know, person gets drunk. Remember those Boy Meets World episodes? I think there were two, where Sean and Corey got drunk off their parts, and the end had, like, this big message about alcoholism and all that. Sorry, I'm getting off track, but those were awesome episodes, as pretty much every episode of Boy Meets World was awesome. That's, you know, let's not try and hash things out or try to reorganize where the awesome went. Boy Meets World equals awesome every time. That, I think, is something we can all agree on. But this made it feel like a special episode of Impact. Again, it's the little things. This, you know, video package that I'm sure took some time to make pays off in just saying Open Fight Night's a big deal. The show kicked off with Devon coming to the ring. He cut a promo saying, hey, I'm a fighting champion. I love the announcement that I have to defend my title every week. And you know what? On Open Fight Night, I get to make a challenge on who I get to defend my title against, which I think is also pretty cool. Devon reiterated that he's a fighting champion, and he said that he wants to fight someone that he has a lot of history with, his brother, Bubba. Of course, by that he meant Bully Ray, and Bully Ray was shown backstage walking out of a crowd of wrestlers, and his music hit as he walked out. And he cut a promo basically saying, no, I don't want to fight you. I'm not in the mood. And Bully Ray tried to leave. Devon went, chased him down, brought him back to the ring, and Devon and Bully Ray went on to have a 10-minute match where Devon defeated Bully Ray with the Spine Buster. Yes, the Spine Buster is his finisher. No, it's not as good as Arn Anderson's, but it's a decent one. This was a pretty decent match. I still don't think that Devon has what it takes in the ring to wrestle every week and keep it interesting. But these two, they had a good match. I'm pretty sure this was the blow-off to their feud that never had a blow-off because, what, Angle got hurt or something? Or Immortal changed Matt? Something, some swervy swerve happened, and Bully Ray was placed into the Immortal storyline instead of being, you know, instead of finishing his program with Devon. And Devon was moved into a never-ending feud with the Pope that involved Terrence and Terrell. Decent match. I still don't think the TV title should be on Devon, but I don't think it should be on Bully Ray either. I think in the next set of tapings, they should find a way to move it off of Devon. It also makes that TV title seem like it's a hard title to defend. And you say, you know what, Devon defended it twice, you know, or three times if you count his cage match against Robbie, or four times if they do it in the second week of the tapings. Devon defended it four times. That's a, you know, it's a hard championship to defend when you have new competitors coming at you every week. And you don't make it a hot potato necessarily, but you have a couple guys lose it after 1 week. And you reinforce, you know, championships in the UFC. Sometimes guys only hold them for one fight. You know, that happens where you get a guy, he wins a championship, he turns around and he loses it in his next fight. Who was it? Junior Dos Santos. Oh, Cain Velasquez did that. He won the title from Brock, next fight, boom, lost it to Dos Santos. That's fine. You know, that's going to happen to some guys. That's definitely a possibility. And you just say that about the TV title, you know. This is tough. If you've got to defend it every week, you're going to have issues. You know, you're going to have issues holding on to it. A three-week title reign, that's three defenses. And, you know, the commentators can make a one-month title reign seem monumental for a TV champion, and the storytelling can do that, too. Then we went to Austin Aries talking backstage, basically saying, hey, Bully Ray, we're still in a feud. I might call you out before the night's over. Then Ric Flair, again backstage, said, woo, we're going to rock Orlando in honor of Eric Bischoff tonight, and I'm sure a part of his soul died as he said it. Backstage, we saw Daniels and Kazarian going up to Kurt Angle like, huh, dude, Kurt, wasn't that super awesome last week when we got all, hey, AJ, here's your secret, and you beat him. And Angle was upset at them and said, don't you interfere in one of my matches again. So, Angle's a babyface now. That happened, and I'll get into more of that turn later, because this was kind of part one of his two-part babyface turn on this show. And, oh, I don't like it. I just, you know, Kurt's turned so much that it's just kind of obnoxious. Then Jeremy Borash came out, and my good friend Ryan Kester, I don't think, knows how to spell Borash because he keeps adding a C to it. Oh, Ryan. Yeah, I'm just making fun of him. He'll listen to this later today and message me on Twitter going, why are you such a jerk, face? I don't know if he'll really put a space in between the word jerk and face like I just did awkwardly, but he'll say something. Anyways, Borash called out Eric Bischoff. TNA did not bleep Bischoff's name, by the way, which was good. And Borash talked about how Bischoff is a bad boss, how he went on Twitter drunkenly and said mean things about him. And I didn't like this segment. And the reason why, and it's a good reason, damn it. The reason I didn't like this segment is this feud has largely been on Twitter. This feud has been on Explosion, where I think they do commentary together. This feud is not a TNA Impact feud. And you're giving TNA Impact TV time to this feud that hasn't really been built up to deserve said TV time. Just, you know, a pet peeve of mine when things like that happen, and I wish they weren't. So, Bischoff came out, the crowd sang the goodbye song, and, Bischoff cut him off and said, you know, you're an idiot, basically, for challenging him. And then my friend and yours, Bully Ray, came out, hit Jeremy Borash with a low blow. Jeremy fell to the ground. Bischoff called the referee down and pinned him for a three count. This was kind of a waste. You know, the feud hasn't been built up enough to deserve that kind of attention. And feuding on Twitter is not building up a feud. I know that someone in TNA Creative is a big social media person, which is great. I think working social media organically into your storylines is a fantastic idea, but the way to do it hasn't been proven, and building up a feud entirely via social media is stupid, as is building up a feud entirely without it sometimes. And then you get into the kayfabe, non-kayfabe line that social media has to walk and all of that. And, you know, at this point, sometimes I just say leave it out instead of including it. I mean, wouldn't wrestling be a better place if John Cena didn't tweet, or if Bobby Roode didn't tweet? Like, Bobby Roode tweets all these, you know, I'm angry at the management of TNA, watch this preview video for Impact type stuff, and, you know, basically his and I'm pretty sure it's his, you know, his and Sting's and everyone else's Twitter account is ran by like two or three people in the TNA office going, man, we're so good at social media. Watch me tweet this like a Rock video package does. So yeah, now that I'm off of that Twitter rant, backstage we saw Mr. Anderson talking about Eric Bischoff, and they had a few people talking about Eric Bischoff all night long, basically saying their goodbyes to him, and Anderson said Bischoff is a bad person. Hooray. Then Anarchia and the rest of Mexican America came out, and they said, hey, why aren't we in that tag team showdown thing? Oh, did I miss the tag team showdown earlier? I might have. No, I'm not, but they said they're not included in the tag title match, and they're upset about this. Yes, they are. They sure are. So they issued an open challenge to anyone in the back, any team, any individual, to take on one or both members of Mexican America, and Kurt Angle's music hit, and Kurt walked to the ring. And this was part two of his babyface turn. He beat Anarchia in 54 seconds. Squash, 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 angle slam, ankle lock. Kurt Angle celebrates to his bad music. Everyone has bad music in TNA. That should just be assumed, by the way. Yeah, this was an odd... Or I find the choice to turn Angle odd. TNA does need more baby faces in the main event scene. I will agree with that because they're running out of people for Bobby Roode to have challenge him. You know, they brought back Rob Van Dam, I think, for that express purpose. So they have Kurt Angle now as a baby face, and I assume as the Slammiversary challenger for Bobby Roode. Will TNA be able to resist the urge? And I know they did for Bound for Glory and for Lockdown. Will they be able to resist the urge to have the big baby face moment at the 10th anniversary show? That's what I wonder. Will they have the wherewithal to hold that back for Bound for Glory or for someone that's not Kurt Angle? Because now I assume, I said it was Sting at Slammiversary before, now I assume it's Kurt Angle at Slammiversary, because why else would you turn him now after he just had this feud with Jeff Hardy and looked to be headed into a feud with AJ Styles? Now Kurt Angle's a babyface? I mean, he can still feud with Styles, babyface versus babyface feud, but it's kind of odd. Angle, as a babyface, doesn't do a ton for me. Here's the thing about Kurt Angle. He's turned so often in TNA and on such, and for never, ever, for a good reason. Look at, you know, he was feuding with Jeff Jarrett, this blood feud. Kurt Angle is a wronged man, and you stole my wife, and you stole my family, and I'm going to get you for it. You know, the cage match, Last Man Standing, the standard match that ended it, because that's how you end feuds in TNA. And then finally, he's beaten Jeff Jarrett. He's there. Then Kurt Angle turns heel and joins Immortal. What? Like, Immortal, which Jeff Jarrett was a part of, and is now frenzies with Jeff and Karen. What? You just had a blood feud. That doesn't make sense. My brain hurts. But that's what TNA does. So Angle now turning, you know, he just had this feud with Jeff Hardy, and yes, it was a loosely built feud based around Jeff Hardy's kid, or Kurt Angle's kid wearing Jeff Hardy t-shirts. Could be worse, Kurt. It could be much worse. They could be Matt Hardy t-shirts. Stronger than death! Yeah, sure you are, Matt. Anyways, I lose my train of thought on occasion. You're not even stronger than pills. So Kurt Angle turns babyface. A weak turn, to say the least, and I'm sure it's to set up something down the road, but I hope TNA at least is cool about it and doesn't decide, you know what would be a great main event for this show? Let's put Kurt Angle and Jeff Hardy as a tag team. Dude, they were just in a thing, you know? Anyways, then we saw a video package for Alex Silva, tonight's TNA gut check person. And he got a video package and talking about, you know, he wrestles for his father and he's full of heart and full of passion. All the things that aspiring wrestlers say. Nice video. You know, not anything super impressive, but a nice video. Something that outlined who Alex Silva is and his motivation. And then we saw Alex Silva walk to the ring with Al Snow, who is, I guess, the senior talent gut check coordinator, head judge of the gut check. And they went to commercial. When they came back, Al Snow said he was the lead judge of the gut check and said, you know, the idea is these guys are going to come in and get a match. And if they, you know, depend based on how they perform, they'll get a contract. And said anyone interested in the gut check and being a part of it should go to ImpactWrestling.com. And I know they do their whole gut check thing at, you know, when they do live events, a lot of times they'll make some extra cash by charging guys $100 or whatever to come and try out for them. And, you know, they've discovered some guys that way. I think they said they discovered Crimson and someone else through the gut check. And not that Crimson's anything to brag about. But that's neither here nor there. They've discovered some guys this way, basically. So we had our fourth match of the evening, which was Robbie E with Robbie T versus Alex Silva. Silva looked all right. I thought his punches looked really odd. They didn't look like wrestling punches. They didn't look strong at all. And that was pretty much the only offense he got. Later on, he got a power slam for a near fall that was decent. But Silva was basically selling for the whole match. Robbie won it with a DDT in 2 minutes and 16 seconds. So that's not all that impressive for him. And then I figured, okay, the whole point of the gut check, now we're going to have the judges interviewed and evaluate them, right? And, oh yeah, for this match, Al Snow replaced Mike Tenay on commentary. And that was bad anyways. Simply because Snow and Taz sound really alike. Like, they have the same kind of vocal place. And Tenay and Taz are at least different. Not that Mike Tenay is a good commentator, because he's pretty much the worst commentator. I'll take out pretty much. I'll say he's the worst commentator working for a major wrestling company today. And I'll include ROH in major wrestling company. So, and then that was it. Like, that was the gut check segment. That, you know, we got a little bit more later, but we didn't find out who the other judges were. There's supposed to be three, and tonight we just had Al Snow. We didn't find out whether or not Silva was going to get a contract. Nothing was really mentioned about it. And we had a small segment a little bit later where they said that it would all happen next week, but I think that's a mistake. You know, that no one's going to tune in to see if the kid who got squashed is going to get his contract. That's not, you know, that's not the story that people are looking for, because he got squashed. Why should I care about him? You know, he was a jobber tonight. So why would I tune in next week to see if he got his contract? I don't intend to. Well, I will watch next week, and I will probably comment on whether or not he gets a contract, but damn it, that's not why. Then we saw Hulk Hogan backstage looking at his cell phone. He's good at that. Then we got Dixie Carter about discussing how she doesn't like Eric Bischoff, and I could basically cut the same promo about how I don't like Dixie Carter's acting, because it was bad. Dixie Carter, not an actress, but, you know, humorously enough, not an actress. So Hulk Hogan then was backstage with the tag teams, and the tag teams backstage were the Motor City Machine Guns, Mr. Anderson and Jeff Hardy, who are apparently a tag team now, Daniels and Kazarian, and ODB and Eric Young. And Hogan was talking about how, you know, he's gonna whittle this down, but it's difficult. These are his top tag team contenders. And, you know, Daniels, he said, you know, tell me why you deserve it. And Daniels said, may I speak up? And started putting the other teams down and saying that he and Kazarian were the most cohesive team. And Hogan said, and things like that. And he called his words sewage, which was odd. The Machine Guns said they've proven themselves. Mr. Anderson and Hardy pretended to get along. And then Eric Young and ODB said that they have the titles. And Eric offered Hulk ODB for the evening. Wow. Then Hogan, looking around this room, said, I'm going to eliminate the Motor City Machine Guns because I don't trust Chris Sabin's knee to be okay. That really bothered me for a couple reasons. One, you could have left the Machine Guns in there for a little while longer, at least to make them look a little bit more legit. You could have left them in there till the end, really. or given them the match. I didn't like that. I don't like the idea that, you know, Hulk Hogan is putting down the Motor City Machine Guns, who just had this hot comeback. I don't see... When Chris Sabin's knee was not the story of the lockdown match, I don't understand making it their story now. You know, like, if you're going to make that the story, make it the story. If you're not, don't make it the story. Like, don't at any point make it the story and just move on. I really didn't like this segment just simply because the Motor City Machine Guns are better than that. Then we saw Miss Tessmacher come to the ring, take a mic and say that everyone in the world is talking about how she beat Gail Kim last week all over social media. They're saying it was a fluke, and I'm like, I didn't... Who are you again? What are you again? And then she laughed and said that she's a legitimate threat to Gail's title and wants to face her tonight. Gail Kim came out and we had Gail Kim versus Miss Tessmacher. So we had that match and Miss Tessmacher defeated Gail Kim in 3:43. Interesting. Really, really interesting concept and match. I think the ongoing story in the Knockouts division right now is Gail Kim versus Velvet Sky, even though Gail beat her in a cage match at Lockdown. It seems like last week they were still focusing on Kim versus Sky. I don't mind focusing on Kim versus Tessmacher. I think it's a okay feud. Tessmacher, I believe, is a better wrestler than Velvet Sky, so that's a plus, even though I don't know if she is a... I don't know if she is a better character than Velvet Sky, which we could get into. But we have Kim versus Tessmacher here. Okay match, you know. I think the idea is to show that Kim is not taking Miss Tessmacher seriously. You know, in the end, I think that's the plan. Then we went to commercial, came back, and Daniels and Kazarian spoke briefly backstage about the tag titles. And Kazarian said that if AJ Styles doesn't show up next week, they're going to expose AJ Styles' secret. They've got to actually tell us what this is at some point. I'm guessing it's a bonus kid. I don't know what else you make it. Maybe it's that he is Dominic's father, and they're going to bring in the recently suspended Rey Mysterio. Wouldn't that be funny? I mean, that would take a set for a dude to show up like that. Then we saw a video package recapping Rob Van Dam and... Bobby Roode, and discussing them and their potential upcoming feud. And here's what I thought was interesting about that video package. It was all we got from them tonight. You know, it's all we got of that feud, and it was just, hey, you know what? Bobby Roode's been world champion for a while. He's doing pretty damn well for himself. Hey, you know what? This guy, Rob Van Dam, and RVD put himself over, you know, I'm one of the best wrestlers in the world. I mean, come on. Who can look at this? I'm Thumb Point Rob Van Dam. And I wanted to be like, hey, that was really cool in 1997. Man, you were so cool in 97. What the hell are you doing in 2012? It's 15 years later, Rob. Let's man up gimmick-wise and actually pick something that is relevant today. And I've never been a big Rob Van Dam person in general. I don't like the character. I don't really get into the act. And as far as the ring work, I don't even like him. I didn't like him in his prime, ring work-wise, let alone now, where he's slow, he's unmotivated, and disappointing every time he gets in there. Then we saw a recap of Silva losing to Robbie E, and Al Snow talked to him backstage, and Bobby Roode walked up. And, you know, this was where Al Snow was like, hey, we're going to have you back here next week, and we're going to find out if you... You know, if you impress the judges enough to be to get a TNA contract. And Bobby Roode walked up and was like, hey, you're that gut check guy, right? And then he punched Silva. Cool. That, you know, that's Bobby Roode for the night. Was like, I'm going to be a petulant child behind Hulk Hogan and I'm going to punch a rookie. All right, Bobby Roode, it factor. Then back in Hogan's office, he said... Eric Young and ODB did something disgusting in their hotel room, so they're out of the running. So now there's just two teams, and he said that Kazarian and Daniels and Hardy and Anderson should meet him in the ring, because that's where he's going to make his decision. I wonder, you know, this is more reality show-esque stuff, almost like Survivor, with Hogan voting people off. I wonder if that's going to be one of the running concepts of Open Fight Night, is these Hulk Hogan office segments. Oddly enough, Hulk Hogan referred to his office as his humble abode in this segment. I'm pretty sure that's actually true. When Linda got the house, Hulk Hogan just started sleeping at the Impact Zone. There's only people there 2 days a month. It's pretty chill. It's a nice, you know, tiny place. I think Hogan's actually sleeping there. But I think that these Survivor-like segments could happen on the once-a-month Open Fight Night episodes. It could be, hey, Hogan's going to whittle down. Who's going to get the championship shot here as we go through the show? It's a nice hook. You watch and you cheer for your favorite guys. I think that's another reason, actually, that you leave the Motor City Machine Guns in there, is that fans want to see the Machine Guns win. You know, so all the way through, you're going, man, I hope the Machine Guns get it. I hope the Machine Guns get the shot. And you'll hook people in, hoping that their favorite guys get it. The reason why I don't think that Hardy and Anderson accomplish that goal is that they're two baby faces that are often in conflict with each other. And they both expressed different goals, too. They've never come out and said, hey, if there's a tag title shot on the line, we want it. They go, we want the world title, and that's it. So this doesn't even accomplish their overall objectives as a character, where for Kazarian and Daniels, it could very well do that. Oh, that's, you know, me just getting into analyzing the story. We saw a Garrett Bischoff promo about his daddy. Good for him. Then Joseph Park found Bully Ray and said, you know, I've heard a lot about you being the last guy to talk to my brother. What's going on? Can we chat? And Bully Ray was on the phone and then, you know, kind of trying to avoid him and trying to get away from him. And, you know, Joseph Park stuck him with a business card that I still maintain will turn into a tiny abyss at one point and tear Bully Ray limb from limb. Then we saw Samoa Joe and Magnus go into the ring. They were followed by the two possible teams that are contenders and Hulk Hogan. Hogan put over Open Fight Night as a ton of fun, and he said, as intense as things are out here, brother, they're even more intense in the back, my brothers. Sure they are, because, you know, we see those cameras in the back, and things are really getting intense. Again, the inherent flaw in Open Fight Night is, why the hell, I'm a wrestler. Let's say I am, find a guy whose name, I'm D'Angelo De Niro. I haven't been on TV in months. It's Open Fight Night. I buy my ticket. You know, I buy my own plane ticket to the Impact Zone. I come out and I say, I want Bobby Roode. I'm Samoa Joe. I come out and I say, I want Bobby Roode. I'm anyone on that roster. Hell, I'm Rob Van Dam. I come out and say, I want Bobby Roode tonight. Every person should be lining up in the back going, I would actually like a shot of Bobby Roode. You know, Zema Ion should be back there going, I think I want to fight Bobby Roode tonight, guys. You guys feeling me fighting Bobby Roode? Everyone, you know, non-title match, title match, whatevskies, everyone should want a shot at Bobby Roode because he's the world champion. And, you know, it's been proven a non-title victory over the world champion usually leads to a world championship match. Why not just try it out? That's the inherent flaw of Open Fight Night, though. That's the main issue with this concept. So then Hogan cut this weird promo where he talked about Daniels and Kazarian being right. Daniels and Kazarian, you are the most cohesive tag team. You are the guys, you know, you're a great team, Daniels and Kazarian. You've got the experience advantage, you've got all of that. And that is exactly why I'm picking Jeff Hardy and Mr. Anderson. Like, Jeff Hardy and Mr. Anderson can't get along, so I'm going to pick them. Boom! Hulked! It didn't make sense. But we got Samoa Joe and Magnus versus Jeff Hardy and Mr. Anderson for the tag team championships. And, this one ended with a... It didn't end in the standard Samoa Joe and Magnus way. Hardy flew from the ring apron, took out Magnus. Back in the ring, Joe reversed a roll-up from Anderson into a rear naked choke to choke out Anderson. Magnus was able to keep Hardy from interfering, and they won the match in 10:39. I liked this match. And this is where I said that TNA's booking surprised me a lot and delighted me. Actually, we got two for one here, because after the match, Daniels and Kazarian attacked the tag team champions as they celebrated and held up the titles. And since then, it's actually been signed at Sacrifice. We're getting Daniels and Kazarian versus Samoa Joe and Magnus. I also think, judging by the end, that we're going to see Jeff Hardy versus Mr. Anderson on that pay-per-view as well. TNA managed, in this match, in this whole angle and segment, to set up two pay-per-view matches in one angle. You know? They've got... And that's impressive to me. That's something that you don't see that often. And I commend TNA for making this call. I think they sacrificed a little too much on the way there, including the machine guns and their overitude. But on the flip side of things, Kazarian and Daniels look like a legit tag team, and they are a great addition to the tag team scene in TNA. If TNA keeps them together, and I don't see why you wouldn't, because you're not going to send them after the X Division title. That's, you know, that doesn't really matter. Daniels would be a hell of an entertaining TV champion, but there's other guys who could do it as well. And you can always have them do both, because the TV championship is defended on TV, and you can always have them talk about being wanting to be a tag team champion too, or have them hold both titles easily. But Daniels would, you know, Daniels and Kazarian, not much to do in the mid-card. Right now they've got their thing with AJ. Why not put them in the tag title scene? Why not give them those tag straps and let them run with them, or let them have a nice little run with Joe and Magnus, where, you know, Magnus is the most green guy in the ring, and his wrestling has improved quite a bit. You could have some really great stuff. I mean, Joe and Daniels have always had chemistry. Kazarian always, you know, always has been pretty decent with those guys as well. And then you throw in Magnus, and hey, you've got a hell of a match. So nice work from TNA here. Really, really good stuff. I don't feel like, Ryan Kester said in his live coverage that open fight night with the gut check being disappointing, which I agree with, and the first tag defense, or the first title defense, not having a title change, that it seems like open fight night is kind of a whimper rather than a roar. I think the idea of tonight was to establish the concept that anything can happen, that champions are going to get called out like Gail Kim did, that things are going to happen that way, but not necessarily to change titles. I don't... Booking-wise, I don't think that would have been the right choice, and I do think that we're going to see some hot shots on Open Fight Night in the future. I think it will become a place for the occasional hot shot, and, you know, I don't love hot-shotting matches, but I think on occasion you should hot-shot a match on Open Fight Night, because you want to say that anything can happen, and TV ratings are super important to TNA, and their ratings are low right now, and hopefully, you know, for their sake, I hope Open Fight Night helped them out on that front. As much as, overall, I didn't enjoy this show. Like I said, it's a minor thumbs down for me. It is. And this final segment is a large reason why. After that tag match, I'm flying high. TNA just flexed their storytelling muscles. And then we got this Eric Bischoff tribute segment, which was the main event. A throne, a podium, and a picture of Bischoff all set up in the ring. Ric Flair comes out with Bully Ray Kazarian, Christopher Daniels, and Gunner. Flair at the podium said tonight is a celebration, and no one knows how to celebrate more than him. Put over Bischoff's legacy, talked about him being handsome, asked women at ringside if they wanted the picture of Flair to take home, or of Bischoff to take home, and I don't know, do something with. Bully Ray hugged Flair before Bischoff, or hugged Bischoff before he took his seat. Flair returned to putting him over. All of this stuff happened. And then, that's where the picture thing happened. Flair thanked Bischoff a final time and handed the mic to Gunner. Gunner referred to Bischoff as a father figure. Flair produced a gold Rolex. And this, you know, it's supposed to be this big ceremony. They're talking about Bischoff's 25th year in the business being cut short and how sad that is. And, you know, Ric Flair is holding this Rolex, and it's supposed to be, you know, I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be like when Flair retired and Shawn Michaels gave him the Rolex, and, you know, they love talking about that stuff. Both companies do. They love that little backstage drama, or that, you know, backstage moment of Michaels giving Flair the Rolex, which I'm sure Flair has pawned for lottery tickets at this point. But that's neither here nor there. Or Chris Jericho stepped on it, or Abyss took it when he needed power, or something weird happened. But basically, you know, Bully Ray told Bischoff that he is the wind beneath his wings, which was funny. Bully Ray is such an interesting character because he can get away with saying things like that. Then, Garrett Bischoff's bad theme music hit, and he came out with no shirt on. Garrett Bischoff just, hey, shirts are for losers. I'm a winner. I don't wear shirts, son. And, you know, he has his bad Bischoff tattoo on his chest. What a D-bag. But Garrett Bischoff, Jeremy Borash, the Motor City Machine Guns, Austin Aries, and Rob Van Dam appeared on stage. They said, Eric Bischoff, you're going to get a parting gift. And here's something I didn't like. Rob Van Dam, you're next. Your current number one babyface, the guy that's going up against Bobby Roode. And I don't like RVD, but the guy who's facing Bobby Roode, yeah, he's just part of the Garrett Bischoff army. AJ Styles, yeah, he's just part of the Garrett Bischoff army. All of these guys are supporting players to Garrett Bischoff. Really? But this segment, basically, they said, you know, there's the Shed of Shame instead of the Hall of Fame or whatever. So, you know, they brought out a porta potty and they started a brawl that Garrett Bischoff was punched a few times in and didn't sell a thing because he doesn't know how to. And he ran to ringside and took Eric and put him in the one wrestling hold he knows, a headlock, and put him inside the porta potty. Then they pushed it over and brown goo dripped out and, you know, oh my God, Eric Bischoff, that smells bad. It says Eric Bischoff is covered in poop. And that was the show. God, I hate that stuff. I hated it when DX did it in 2006. I just hate the whole porta potty thing. It's so stupid. It's just so gross. Let's be real here, guys. I am not a poop humor kind of guy. I can laugh at the occasional joke like that if it's actually funny. This was not funny. I can understand why you would try this, but I think it's up to wrestling fans to say, dude, TNA, no, let's not do that. It's assuming, again, I get really upset at wrestling companies when they assume the worst of their fans. I feel like that's what the Mexican America Act does with how xenophobic it is, with just how, and, you know, same thing with Hunico and Camacho on the SmackDown brand right now. When it's so, when it just says, hey, all of our fans are racist, right? So we can go ahead and do this. Cool. I don't like it. Again, I'm not about assuming the worst of wrestling fans. I'm about assuming the best of wrestling fans and hoping and praying that they prove, you know, that they prove you right. Don't wait for wrestling fans to prove they're not racist. Don't put racist angles on and you won't reinforce that stereotype. Yeah. It's a little thing sometimes, and I get, when a wrestling company insults wrestling fans, I get upset. That's who I am. And this was upsetting to me. I didn't like it. Obviously, you know, all of that to say, in the basis terms, I didn't like it. It seems like, honestly, TNA Creative was sitting backstage after they announced the Bischoff farewell, going, watching the trial of Eric Bischoff from Raw in 2005 with Vince McMahon as the judge and the garbage truck and all that, going, how do we top this? Let's think about it. Huh, how are we gonna, you know what? I've got a great idea. Poop! And, you know, everyone turned and went, poop is the best idea. And, you know, lifted him up on their shoulders and were like, poop, 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 let's put him in poop. Poop is worse than garbage, right? And that's how this idea was born. With that segment in mind, I give Impact a minor thumbs down. I think the Open Fight Night's, the Open Fight Night concept is interesting. The issue that I have with it is that it seems like it could get in the way of stories rather than forwarding and telling the stories that are already being told. Open Fight Night shouldn't become a night for side stories like Bischoff and Borash. It should become a night for the stories that are already being told to be enhanced, to be changed, to take their next step. You know, you make it a major thing, but you don't make all of, you know, you make a couple stories even culminate at it, but you don't make it a night of exclusively side stories that aren't going to matter in a week. And I fear that that is what TNA did here. And I hope I'm wrong. But there were moments where I know that's what TNA did here. The lack of the world champion being on the show or being challenged. I think Open Fight Night was a great time to have your, a mid-card babyface. A guy that, you know, he gets beat. Whatevs. It's not a major, it's not a major disaster for the show if he gets beat. Even, you know, a Tony Nese, an X-Division babyface. I'm trying to think. TNA's mid-card is so weird, you know? Because AJ Styles, I consider him a TNA mid-carder, but he's a guy who can go up and challenge for the TNA championship. There's, you know, TNA has this expanded mid-card that is kind of everyone. But even like an Alex Shelley or someone to come out and say, you know what, I think I'm pretty damn good, and I want to face the TNA champion to find out. You know, you make it his own personal gut check in a way where he says, I'm good, I want a shot at the champion. Championship not on the line. I want to see if I can beat him. And you know what? You have a 10-minute competitive match. Robert Roode, I'll stick with Alex Shelley right now. Robert Roode versus Alex Shelley. 10-minute competitive match where Shelley looks good, but not too good. You know, Roode shows a little bit of ass, but not too much. And in the end, Roode gets a clean win with his finisher, whatever the hell it is. And please don't make his finisher in that situation be taking sliced bread number two and Shelley somehow getting knocked out by it. But an actual finisher from Bobby Roode. And Bobby Roode's chance to stand tall. It would be the first clean win that Bobby Roode has had in his six-month world championship reign. And Alex Shelley would have gained something by going toe-to-toe with the world champion and looking good doing it. It's not that hard, TNA. I know pro wrestling booking is complicated. I understand that. I am not a pro wrestling booker. But I understand that booking is difficult, it's complicated, and it's not something that most people should do. What I'm saying is that there are logical ways to tell stories that are different than what you're telling, that enhance the stories that you're telling and give you a nice place to go. That's all. The concept itself, I think, could end up being a failure. It's too soon to tell. Next month's open fight night should be really interesting. But, thank you guys so much for joining me today on this ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. Again, membership, if you're interested, ProWrestling.net, click that right-hand link, boom, it's going to take you to the membership sign-up page. Within 2 minutes, you have ad-free access. You've got the forum. You've got all of the audio updates ever in the site's history. There's a lot of bang for your buck from ProWrestling.net, and I hope you guys check it out. If you do, drop me a line in the forum. Come and chat with me. And if you want to interact with anything I said, man, my email's always there. It's willtime@gmail.com. My Twitter is @itswilltime. Come and talk to me, guys. Thank you so much for listening, and have a fantastic day.